Well, like everyone else, I am stuck in the broadcast bunker doing my thing. And of course, it's very interesting because time doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything. So I sleep, I don't sleep, I work, I don't work, and it all kind of just mixes together, which for me is kind of fun. I'm kind of thriving on chaos. And so it is time for more of a freewheeling conversation about what's going on, because I put up some pretty heavy podcasts recently, and it's time to review a little bit and think and do some COVID chaos denial observations in Bob Davis Podcasts 914. One of the things that has happened recently is that state governments have shut down gyms, among other businesses where there's human contact. And this is very hard on gym owners and yoga studio owners. And of course, one of my clients is Fitness Together, which is basically very skilled trainers working with people in an environment where you're the only person in the gym working out. And I've advertised them before, had a number of testimonials from people who had used Fitness Together services. They're going to be starting some online classes, which are actually going to be really affordable, and you can get an idea of what they do and how they do it. And they are really, these are very skilled and highly educated trainers. You can listen to the John Unverzot interview about the history of the fitness industry and Fitness Together as a company. And I'm just going to put the banner up for Fitness Together at the top of the page at the Bob Davis podcast.com. Click on that, and then I will tell you about what they're doing and give you some numbers in future podcasts. And of course, if you're working from home or if your business is shut down and it's just essential personnel doing things, guess what? Cartridge World in Maple Grove is still up and running, and they got lots of print cartridges. They can get you up to 30% compared to big box stores, and they deliver. So here's what you do. Call them at 763-420-6632 or click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. The way this works is every now and then I have to do some kind of a podcast where I consolidate the podcasts I've done previous, which sometimes can get pretty heavy. So, for example, I did a depression podcast. I did a podcast about Republicans losing their political principles, which I've done many of over the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years, actually, going back 5 years, I've been talking about this. And now suddenly with the stimulus package nearing $6 trillion, and with Republican candidates and the president ballyhooing it, I find it fascinating that that podcast is suddenly current, and so that's up there. But I have to go every now and then and just kind of do a freewheeling talker to kind of just kind of consolidate all this in my own mind, if not draw the subscriber and listener attention to these other podcasts that I've done, which actually turn out to be usually a little bit ahead of the curve. And I think it's just because I'm paying very close attention to what is being written and the numbers and social media, and trying to find these endpoints to give listeners and subscribers a little bit more than just here's what's going on today. You know, one of the things that Steve Bannon refers to is filling the channel with crap. He uses a different term, but this keeps my non-explicit rating on iTunes. But it's the idea is you fill the channel with so much nonsense that everyone is playing your game. And so if I wanted to, I could do a daily podcast about the statistics and what the president said and why it's right or wrong and everything else. And those podcasts are worthless because in 2 days, that stuff is out of date because they are so busy filling the channel with crap. And meanwhile, you know, the weird and surreal feelings are that you look out the window and you're like, is it Sunday? Is it Monday? Is it Tuesday? Or last Sunday, I thought it was Saturday, and Monday, I thought it was Sunday. So you get very confused if you're not checking your calendar or your watch or your phone to determine what the actual date is. It's weird. It's a weird kind of feeling. So what I want to talk about are, I think, some key salient points that I consider them waypoints in this whole thing. And I'm going to start with a podcast I did about depression. So as I said in that podcast, you're going to start seeing people posting things about depression. You're going to start seeing that word in news articles, and you're going to start seeing that word on the Drudge Report, and you're going to start seeing that word, and you need to understand what that is. And so the short version is that I talk about how depression is caused. Depression in particular is an extended period of economic negative economic growth or contraction. And almost everyone is saying that we're going to see something like 4% negative growth in the first quarter and maybe as much as 20% or more in the second quarter. If we see a quarter with more than 10% contraction, that's going to be historic because we've never had a quarter more than that. A depression is an extended period of steep contraction. So at the very least, two quarters of contraction is a recession. So at the very least, we're going to have a very deep recession. This explains a lot of what is going on. The other component of the Depression podcast was this discussion of deflation, where things get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, which actually isn't really happening right now. It could happen. And this is generally because there isn't enough currency in the system to support pricing. So what happens is that the dollar increases its value, or the currency in a particular country increases its value, and people delay consumption because there aren't enough dollars in the system. This explains why the Fed has pledged to keep the banking system liquid and has pledged to do all sorts of easing so that they can keep the currency, so to speak, in a state of high liquidity, so that we don't have deflation, because deflation is what they are most scared about. I don't need to review all that. Just listen to that podcast to understand it. I also want to point out something that I think is very interesting, and I'm going to get to that shortly. And this is this concept of denying or minimizing the symptoms and the actual impact of a pandemic, because I looked that up in the Spanish flu thing when I talked about a little bit about what was going on. The other podcast that I think is really significant is the Conservative Principles podcast. The idea is that suddenly we're all Keynesians, meaning that we are all trying to prime the pump, and all the Republicans are now supporting this huge stimulus package that they would have choked on 10 years ago. In fact, almost all Republicans vehemently opposed the Obama stimulus package, and now they're furious at Democrats for trying to put things in to the stimulus bill that the Republicans would have tried to put in were the roles reversed. And it's interesting to me because almost all the conservatives that I know that claim to be fiscal conservatives are now suddenly saying, well, this is an emergency, and we've got to keep business. We've got to keep these businesses afloat. And I would just simply say, without getting into a big political argument, that these are not the principles of Republicanism. These are not the principles that the Republican Party has operated on for the past at least 45 years or 50 years since the Reagan administration. The mid-70s, when the idea was limited government, anti-abortion and conservative, hawkish defense. Those were the three principles of the Republican Party back in the late 70s and early 80s with the Reagan Revolution. This bears no resemblance to that quote-unquote conservative principle. In fact, even if you go back to Calvin Coolidge, it bears no resemblance to any kind of quote-unquote Republican, idea. So it's fascinating to me that they have just thrown that all over the gunwales in a headlong effort to quote-unquote save business. And then they're angry at the Democrats for saying, well, what about working families, or what about other issues, which, whether you agree or disagree with them, they are perfectly within their rights to hold up passage of the bill if they want to put stuff in there that are important. So then, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to post links to all this, these two podcasts, because I think they're really salient right now. And I think, if you can't maintain your principles in the face of a crisis, how can you maintain your principles And I would ask this question of people who are Trump supporters, as well as people who are Republicans, even if they don't support Trump. How can you say that you're principled, that you're for limited government, that you're for fiscal responsibility, and then suddenly turn and support this because you're terrified that business is going to be affected? This is a once-in-a-lifetime event, what we're dealing with here. And we are, you know, 9/11 was certainly a once-in-a-lifetime event, but the truth is 9/11 really didn't seriously negatively affect the United States economy. We didn't have a negative effect of the U.S. economy really until the mortgage meltdown in 2008. And the truth is, we really never fully recovered from 2008, and we were keeping the world's economy on life support through quantitative easing by the central banks and other kinds of central bank interventions. Since 2008, we've never really fully recovered from that, and now we're asking the central banks and our governments to provide even more stimulus because the reality is that our economy never really could have survived even a minor shock, let alone a gigantic shock such as this one. So that's one of the, these are the two podcasts that I think are really significant. And I want to say one other thing, and I will post links to those two podcasts, because really what they are is they're not critiques. Because this is all the depression one I did before the full impact of what they're talking about in terms of stimulus became apparent. And I certainly did the Conservatives Principles podcast before the full impact of what the president is proposing and what Republicans are proposing became apparent. So they were, in that sense, prophetic. Prophetic! At least anticipatory, let's put it that way. But I do want to talk a little bit about what I haven't done, and I think this is really important. And then I want to do, in the second half of this podcast, I am going to talk a little bit about the virus, because I think there's some points that need to be made, and I will make them as softly as I can, because I think people are very confused. I'm going to talk about minimizing this in the face of a crisis, and I'm going to talk about why that's happening in the second half of this podcast. But I'll tell you what I haven't done. I haven't told people this is the gospel on this virus. I am not an epidemiologist. I certainly watch the numbers. I'm not a statistician, although I do understand the relationship between numbers and the number of people infected and so forth. And I've done enough research to know what all that means. And so I get all that. But what I have steadfastly refused to do is tell you what you should believe regarding this virus. I'm going to give you some information that might help you, but I am not going to be one of the people that says there's nothing to worry about, this isn't that big of a deal, and I'm also not going to be one of the people that says this is the end of the world and you should, oh, by the way, we've got masks on sale now on our website and our Etsy shop and other types of gear. Oh, by the way, I've got a 14-gallon box of emergency rations available now at the website for $14.99. Oh, by the way, I'm doing Zoom sessions on how you can be prepared if you're not. Oh, by the way, this is what you should be buying at the store. Just message me and I'll send you my book. I'm not doing that at all. And I wouldn't even presume to tell you what to do. You're going to have to figure that out for yourself. And there's plenty of other places to go if you really do want to buy the masks and all that other nonsense. So I haven't done that. And I haven't engaged in this alarmist, here's the latest, I saw tanks moving through the city and all that nonsense. There's a lot of people doing that, and it's a disservice, and it's frightening people. And while there's nothing we can do about it, buyer beware. So that when you're talking about what you're watching and listening to, caveat emptor. And I have steadfastly tried not to talk about those things, because I think it's really dangerous to do that when you're going to say something that may not be right. But I am going to make some statements in the second half of this podcast that you can check. I'm pretty sure they're fairly close to what is going on, and I think people should think about these things. This is a great time to tell you that you can subscribe to the Bob Davis Podcasts at iTunes. So if you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, you probably won't encounter too many internet slowdowns because each new episode comes directly to your phone and it's all ready to go and you get a notification. Also, you can get the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at the BobDavisPodcasts.com with audio streaming or listening to individual podcasts. You just click on the podcast player and it plays. I also recommend Spotify and subscribe at Spotify for Android devices. Also Tuned In and Stitcher for Android devices. And thanks for visiting thebobdavispodcast.com and liking and sharing the posts on Facebook and Twitter. That really helps thebobdavispodcast.com. If your company is considering American manufacturing, remember DepoStar, American design, engineering, and manufacturing. Visit them at depostar.com. Remember when I said that one of Steve Bannon's precepts and guidelines for politicians is to fill the channel with crap? So that means fill all of the communications channels with as much nonsense as you can, because it drowns out any opposition and it also drowns out any ability to reason, because everyone is reacting to what you're saying. So this is the explanation for the reason that Trump is doing a press conference every day. It's the reason Trump does these giant rallies. It's the reason he tweets, because he's basically trying to dominate the media battle space. And then everyone else has to play this game where they respond to Trump. And I won't play that game, because that's the stupidest thing you can do. What you have to do is to fill the channel with your own crap as much as you can. You have to basically take a positive forward momentum view of getting your own message out and basically not responding to the message from the president, or respond to the message from whoever is filling the channel regardless, because that's a tactic that I'm sure that in the same position, Democrats would have some use of. So, you know, Republicans, because they have the White House, they have the bully pulpit, and they're using it to fill the channel with crap. That's the most important thing. And so on a day-to-day basis, there are so many things to respond to that it's almost impossible to respond. So you're getting information. And if you've ever tried to do anything, let me give you an example. Just imagine that you had never sailed before, and somebody put you in a sailboat and said, you're going to sail this boat. And as you're trying to sail the boat, they're yelling at you constantly. No, 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 left, no, right. No, you've got to do this. You've got to, no, that's not how you do that. And you would not be able to do it. You'd be trying to comply with their orders and listening to people telling you that you should be thinking this and you should be doing that and everything else. So let me tell you a little story. I've often told about it in podcasts. I just love this story. When I was about 12 or 13, we went up to Michigan to a friend's lake cabin. And, you know, I was from Chicago. I was a really little kid, and I had not done sports because I was a little bit self-conscious about my size, and I was reticent to play sports. I think I've told everybody this story about how when we had gym, I would take a book with me, and I put it in my, I'd stick it in the waistband of my shorts, and I would fade as far back to left field as I could. And I would sit on the hill and read, and they would forget about me because I was afraid to catch the softball, or I didn't want to deal with it, and I would just refuse to participate. And I had never water skied, and I had never done anything physical like that, really. I'd done physical stuff because I was a physical kid, climbing trees, running, all that stuff. But I shied away from the athletic type stuff. Well, these kids at this cabin, the kids of the people that owned the place, had spent their entire summer up there, and they were like 15. And so they seemed like giants to me. And, you know, in the full flower of puberty, and they were muscular to me, and they were scary, and I was really nervous. And I was sitting on the dock, and they came down and said, hey, you're going to water ski. And I wanted to be accepted by them, and I said, oh, no, I don't know if I can do that. They said, can you play basketball? Well, I didn't really know how to play basketball. But I said, oh, yeah, I know how to play. I knew how to dribble a ball, right? I didn't understand the game because nobody ever played it with me because I didn't want to play. I remember my mom asked me once, do you want to do Little League? And I was terrified. Well, of course I don't want to do Little League. I'd just rather read a book. So these guys said, we're going to take you water skiing. So we went out in the boat, and they slapped these skis on me, and they put me in the water and they said, hang on, bend your knees and just follow our cue. And I popped up and skied around the lake because I was afraid to fall. And everyone was amazed. Oh my God, Bob is skiing. How did they pull that off? And so this was then began a series of challenges to see what I could do in everything that these guys did every day. And I passed them all with flying colors. So they thought by the time dusk came, they were like, this guy's fantastic. Let's give him the sailboat. And so they had been out sailing and we sailed over to this this girl's house. And that somebody followed us in the boat and in the powerboat. And unbeknownst to me, the plan was they were going to go to the girl's house and then they were going to just give me the sailboat and tell me to sail it back. And this was an expensive, you know, I think it was about, I want to say it was about a 12 footer or 18 footer. It was a big sailboat. I mean, it was no joke, this thing. And they said, you're going to sail the boat back. And it was a very calm evening. And I was like, I don't know how to sail. I was terrified. This time I really was terrified. And this is what they did. They said, do this, do that. This is what the sail does. This is what the rudder does. Just adjust the sail into the wind and turn the rudder the other way and just keep the bow into the wind and you're going to be fine. So I said, I couldn't say okay and I couldn't say no. I was like, what if I wreck it? You're not going to wreck it. Don't worry. So I sailed the sailboat back across the lake and it was dark and I couldn't believe that I had done that. I was absolutely in absolute heaven coming across that lake, realizing that I could sail with very little instruction. My point here is nobody said this, that, and the other thing. So as we fill the channel with BS, remember, you don't need to be told day in and day out what's going on. You just need to have some basic precepts about what's going on here. And one of the biggest problems with a pandemic, and this is actually a medical fact, I discovered it when I looked up the Spanish flu. And this fact is that it is a factor, it is a feature in pandemics that people tend to minimize them and deny that they are a problem, and they will even deny symptoms until it kills them. So one of the things that kills people in pandemics is this denial mechanism, or for lack, I think that's probably an extreme case because when we associate denial with alcoholism, but denial is also what kills alcoholics, right? Minimization is what kills alcoholics, and it also kills people in epidemics and pandemics because they don't believe it's as bad as they say it is. So when we talk about death rates, when we talk about, you know, my bugaboo, which is people comparing this to the flu, which they should not do. This is not a flu. In fact, if you want to compare it to a flu, you should compare it to the Spanish flu because the death rates are probably going to shake out to be relatively similar. So COVID-19 is probably going to kill 1% to 2% or more of the world's population. Spanish flu killed 2.5% of the world's population when the final numbers were tallied. Coronavirus / COVID-19 is considerably more deadly than the yearly flu. Well, I've read different statistics. Some say it is 0.1 or 0.095% morbidity rate for the yearly flus, depending on what you look at. So the way to think about this is if let's say 70% of the U.S. population is somewhere around 300 million. I'm going to use whole numbers because it's easier to work with. And the death rate from coronavirus is 1% or 1.5%. Let's just say it's 1.5%. At 300 million infected, that is roughly 4.5 million deaths. So this is why this is a serious problem. The other problem is, of course, people require hospitalization in order to survive. And then that's how you get the situation in New York and Italy where the hospitals are full. And so this is why a desperate and terrified government is doing these things, which may or may not be advisable. I don't know where you come down on what I call physical separation, because I think social distancing is a bad term. I also think the wartime metaphors are not correct for a health emergency. And when you talk about physical separation, the idea is that if people are kept 6 feet apart from each other or basically sequestered from each other by sheltering in place alone, then you will have fewer infections. And the idea is that you will reduce the curve. And then when the disease burns out, fewer people will be infected and thus fewer people will die. We don't know at this point in March of 2020, whether we've missed the boat on the sequestering or not. So I'll leave you to think about that. The thing that people don't understand is that every time somebody talks about the flu versus coronavirus, they talk numbers. They say, oh, well, we've only seen, 30,000 cases or 60,000 cases. We've only seen 670 or 750 or however many deaths have occurred. And so I don't know what you're worried about. The flu killed 16,000 people last year, and we haven't even had that yet. Well, in Italy, they've, if you look at China, they've already exceeded that number in China alone. So if the same situation, if the similar death rates are, upheld in the United States from this, then you're going to have the problem. And this is where this tendency towards minimization comes in. So people, it's a natural thing to deny change, and it's a natural thing to minimize change. Oh, it's not that bad. We're living in a truck down by the river. It's not that bad. We used to own a big giant house, but we're okay, right? So you minimize because that's how you get through it. Pandemics work the same way. I'm not sick. This is not happening. The plane isn't crashing. All of these things that people do that prevents them from taking action that might save their lives. And that's what we're dealing with. So that's why, and I think the government is taking a heavy hand. I think the stimulus, I think $4 trillion of stimulus is a bit premature. I don't know that that's going to stave off the problem, because as we know with stimulus, we learned this before, that what happens is, the government has to push that money out to the states, and the states have to push that money out to businesses. By the time many of the people that I know that are in business get any help, they will be out of business by the time the states get around to addressing it, especially with only essential staff. So it seems silly to even be talking about this stuff, but it is important that people understand the depth of this crisis. This is no joke, and that's where I'm coming from. If it goes away and summer comes and COVID goes away and the death rates peak tomorrow, great. I'm not invested in having it be a disaster. I'm not invested in Trump looking like a fool. I'm not invested in the government failing or anything else. I just think this is one of those events that is really a once in a millennial kind of event. I think this is potentially a big sea change in the way we think, in the way we operate, and in terms of death. We haven't seen something like this do the damage that it has already done as quickly as it has already done in a long time. And if it continues, then you're really going to see damage. When the lieutenant governor's brother dies, when a U.S. senator's husband is hospitalized, when playwrights and other people are dying, and when people are going to the store and buying drugs that the president said work and getting it wrong and killing themselves, this is a serious situation. And I just think that when we look at principles, when we look at what people think they are, all of these things. Oh, they self-identify as a liberal or a conservative or a Republican or a Democrat or, this or that. All that stuff is going out the window, in my view. And I think it's going to be a matter of time before people finally figure out that that's what's going on. So these are just some random thoughts about this chaos. As I sit here, I'm doing a lot of business networking online. It's great. And I will do a future podcast with some of my business networking partners on that. And, for me, this doesn't really mean a big sea change. This is kind of the way it operates over here at the BobDavisPodcast.com, where we're at world headquarters. I'm pretty much running a home business, so I'm from here all the time. I don't get out that much unless I go to do yoga, so I'm doing yoga here. But I'm thriving in this. I'm having a great time as long as I don't get it. And if I do get it, I'll continue to podcast throughout the disease so you can hear how it kills me or not. Yeah, and this will eventually end, and people have been in their houses, and they have, I'm sure, if you're in your house, you've had a chance to think about what you would do if you could redo things. And I'm going to recommend Whitetail Builders. They are great because they understand process is just as important as the end result. Randy Grabo is the guy. He is an amazing craftsman, does great work, and if you go to whitetailbuildersinc.com, you'll see some of the stuff they've done. He loves to redo kitchens, and by now, I'm sure you want to get your kitchen redone. Call Randy at 612-282-8801, 612-282-8801. If you can do it now, this is a great time to redo your kitchen or do the basement to get the kids out of the upstairs or even a man cave for the garage. If you can do it now, they are standing by at Whitetail. WhitetailBuildersInc.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to podcast 914, COVID Chaos, Denial, Observations. Bye-bye. Do you know we are the young ghosts? In reverse, our stories unfold. Moving slow.